is Wednesday, December the 9th. This is the Mind and Fitness Podcast. I am your host, Eddie Lindenstein, and wanted to make sure that I give a good shout out to Yabla.com, Yabla.com. It's a language learning software system. So if you are in the market to learn a new language, it's a great place to go, Yabla.com. They're big supporters of the podcast, and we're very happy to have them around. Also, want to make sure I give a big shout out to the patrons of the podcast, patreon.com/ The Mind and Fitness Podcast. Shout out to Colette and Matt, Mindy, Irina, Kelly, Tony, Francisco, Ashley, Michael, Mike, Victoria, Chad, Anthony, Jen, and Nate, Eddie, Jenny, Christina, Ross, Julie, Casey, Alyssa, Brian, Arnie, Barb, and Kim. Thank you all so much from the bottom of my heart for being patrons of the show and supporting keeping the show available. So really quick intro today, and it's not often that I record an episode and then it airs the next day, so I'm recording this on Tuesday the 8th, but it is going to air on Wednesday the 9th, and it's a two-person guest episode that we're doing on Google Hangouts, and so I'm hoping that everything goes off perfectly. Usually I'm using Skype for these interviews, so it's going to be interesting to have it on a different platform, but it's going to be with Julie Markowitz, who's been on the show, and then Jim Prusak, the pain PT, as well. So they've got a project that they're working on that's upcoming, and then I've got some Facebook questions I'm going to ask them as well. So without further ado, here is Julie and Jim. Okay, so I just put the two guests on the spot, and I had said that, you know, normally when I record an episode, I have the opportunity to go back after the fact and record the opening, but this is a high-stakes situation, so I've already recorded the opening, and they're both here on the line, so it's going to be great, and I promised you it was going to be great. And so Julie Markowitz and the pain PT Jim Prusak are both here, and we're doing it on video. How are you both doing?
Doing well.
Awesome. Doing well.
Awesome. You know, so I mentioned briefly off air that this is the first time, I think. So this is episode 153. I think that what's interesting is that both of you have done two separate appearances. And so you're both three-peats, but you're both three-peats on the same day, which the odds of that ever happening again are very slim for any other guest that's been on twice. So
I'm going to buy a lottery ticket today.
Yeah. I don't know what the California Powerball. So let me tell you. Okay, so let me ask. If you both buy, because Julie, you're in Southern California as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you both win and bought a lottery ticket today, does that technically make you adversaries?
No, we'll share it.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's a few reasons. I love having them both on. In fact, Julie specifically, it's funny, when we finished recording the last two times, I remember thinking as the episode's going on, I'm like, a lot of times I refer to the people I have on the show as dance partners, and I'm kind of like, the last couple of times I'm like, the dance is beginning a little bit slow. And then by the end, I turn it off and I'm like, gosh, that went super well. And then I go and listen to it, and it's always way better than even I remember it being. And I don't know if it's the like revisionist history idea where usually there's like a month of separation between recording and airing. This is a little different because this is going to air within a 24-hour, actually less than that. It's gonna run live in 11 hours. And so there's a few reasons why you're both here. And there's a joint project that you're working on. And I'd love for the listeners to learn more about that, because I think that your two minds together is a real gift. And so can you guys talk about what's coming up?
Sure. You want me to take it, Jim? Okay.
Go for it, Julie.
Yeah, so Eddie, you actually introduced Jim and I before I moved to California, and Jim and I got to talking, and we were both kind of, we have the same idea about healing chronic pain, chronic illness, TMS, whatever we want to call it, that it's about how to be with our experience and keeping it simple, acknowledging that there's actually safety in the experience, and kind of just reiterating the same points over and over again, like, I'm safe, I'm okay, like, I can be with what's happening with me. And Jim and I both are interested in the nervous system and the brain and how that kind of creates symptoms and how we alleviate symptoms through retraining the brain and the nervous system.
Yeah, and that's exactly what it is. And I think we kind of hit it off because we, you know, Julie moved out here. Eddie, you were the common, you're part of this as well now, because you were the linchpin to put us together. we met over coffee just one time, and we chatted and we talked, and I think we were supposed to meet for like, you know, 30 minutes, and it was like 3 hours or something. And then we said, you know, at some point it'd be great to do something together, like a course, because we're both working with people in chronic pain, and we're both coming from a little bit different discipline, but have a lot of similarities. And really, it is about safety in the brain, you know, versus danger. And there's so much science that's coming out supporting all this work. And so I want to bring some of that to support what we're doing to add a little bit more legitimacy to what we do. We know it works, and there's a reason for it. And so we're trying to make it very simple and not make it complicated. I know there's a lot of things out there that people can do. And Eddie, I'm sure you get questions all the time about, you know, what should I do? I'm doing this, I'm doing that. And we just want to simplify this and make it really straightforward so people can A, understand it. As Dr. Sarna said, knowledge is the key. And then from there, we can move into how you can create safety in yourself.
You know, it reminds me of, because there's been so many, you know, there's different books and different voices that have come out over the last 20, 30 years on this particular topic. And one of the things that always has really struck me and really stuck with me since meeting with Dr. Hanscom at the Washington State Athletic Club a couple of years ago for the first interview I did with him is that he was very insistent that it, because so much of the, I feel like the Steve Ozanich maybe way of thinking or speaking has a lot, so much to do with belief. You know, if you believe in this, eventually your symptoms will subside or whatever the particular language is there. And Dr. Hanscom is still very much of the belief that, funny belief, pun not intended, but it's not necessarily has to be a belief thing. It is what it is. The facts are this is nervous system, and the facts are this is brain science. So just do the steps and you will get better. And that sounds a lot like what you're both talking about.
Yes. Yeah, I think so. I think that we have so much science now about how the nervous system works, and particularly polyvagal theory, which I teach all my clients about, because I think it's so important to understand how the communications happen in our nervous system and the different states of being so that they don't feel so overwhelmed by what's happening. Because a lot of people come to me who have TMS and they're like, I don't understand what's happening. Like, I'm really freaked out. And I try to tell them, like, you know, this is just, actually, it's kind of like a normal nervous system response to feeling threat. And then it kind of takes some of the power away when we understand the science of it. Like, it is just science, and it's not magic, you know?
Yeah, it's not magic, though. It can seem like magic for some people. Read Dr. Sarna's books, right, and wake up the next day with no pain. I've seen that before with people, but that's not always the case. But, you know, I like to think of it, too. It's like, okay, here's your brain. You lived your whole life up to this point. You know, what's happened to you? This shapes your brain even before you know what's happening to you when you're a child, when you're an infant. And what's happening now usually is a product of your past. And we have to take that and balance that with the reality of your situation right now. Is this really dangerous what you're doing? XYZ situation you're in. Your brain may be firing off that it is, but the reality is that you're safe. And so we want to create that safety and learn to create the safety in the brain and nervous system through various ways of working with the body, working with the mind. And I think that's what Julie and I are pretty excited about, is trying to make it very direct and simple with a lot of just sort of, like you said, Eddie, do the steps, repetition.
You know, Julie, one of the things that it's the top of your website, and it's something you talk about a lot, is the idea of power. We did an entire episode together on the concept of taking back your power. And Jim, I can't remember if it was the roundtable that I did with you not long ago, or there was something recently where I was on it or I was talking about it, and it was like whoever was speaking to me, they were putting into perspective one of the stories that I had told, which was a competitive athlete in weightlifting and CrossFit, and then something happened and it's almost like a bomb blew up in my body and suddenly everything starts to hurt. And at the time, my internal speak was, that just happens to athletes. Sometimes they just explode on the inside and everything starts hurting. But whomever it was I was talking to, and again, I think it was you, had basically said, you know, to kind of think about the logic behind that. Is that really even possible? And so when you or whoever it was that said it, what kept ringing through my head is Julie's taking back your power, because that is not indicative of somebody who is an athlete. Like their body literally, like it would be so hard to just suddenly break. Even if you think about people who never exercise or never strength train or never any of these things, how difficult and how tough the body really is as a machine. There's so many things that you can go out and do, you know, fall off. Like we hear stories all the time, people falling off mountains, people fall, like all these miraculous things that somehow they survive or they walk away from. There was a crash in the G1 or whatever it was called in Italy last week. Car explodes, dude flips 50 times, just gets up and walks away from this burning car. And like, you know, I can't imagine, I mean, maybe that guy's in the weight room strength training and doing all this stuff all the time, but that guy didn't have a scratch on him and he just walked away from it. So Julie, I use your phrase and rhetoric around taking your power back in a big way. And it's some of the messaging that I give to people constantly, especially the ones that I talk to now where, you know, 9 or 10 months ago, I was working out regularly in strength training with these big groups of people. And now none of us have seen each other in the flesh since March. And a lot of them are popping up with these little, sometimes it's an injury or sometimes it's migraines or sometimes it's this or that. And they kind of just think that it's serendipitous and it's a coincidence when I'm trying to explain that it's not necessarily a coincidence. Can you two maybe talk a little bit about, because the thing that I love about having you both here is that you're teaching the same thing, you're doing this course together, but you're sort of on radically different sides of the equation on the surface. One is a physical therapist, one is an LMSW. So you have different, you're speaking about the same thing, but you're on opposite sides. It's like a basketball player and a football player coming together and saying, yeah, we play different things, but we both play with a ball, right? In front of people. So can you guys just talk a little bit about the, you know, the COVID crisis and your state? My state was the epicenter. Your state very much is the about as much of an epicenter as there can be. And I'm not here to talk about politics and Gavin Newsom and people have their opinions and all that stuff. But just talk about the, you know, the evolution of your clients and your clientele and what you're seeing with people that you're working with or talking to since March.
Okay, I can take that. I mean, it's definitely evolved. I think that in March, people really freaked out and didn't understand what the hell was happening. And there was so much uncertainty. And I think of, like, what I want to say in regards to TMS treatment is that part of what our job is to teach people how to live with uncertainty. And because nothing is certain, like Jim and I keep trying to stress, we're going to stress in our course is like a being safe with dealing with uncertainty. But what I've seen kind of evolving is, I have a lot of clients who are really angry right now. First there was kind of like helplessness. Now there's a lot of anger. Some people are kind of accepting of like, this is reality right now. But I think one of the most prominent themes is people are really angry at other people. And I think this comes up a lot with TMS patients.
Oh my God, sorry.
What was that, Eddie?
It was my work. It speaks to what we're talking about right now. My whole life is in my garage now.
Great.
So it's where I work out. It's also my office. It's where all my work monitors and everything are. And my Echo is, so every time I get an email, my Amazon, I can't say her name, but you know what I'm talking about. She says my name loudly and it is what it is. I may edit it out, but this is, you know, we're live. We'll
it's
just keep it.
It's kind of funny. Yeah. So I'd say like a prominent theme is people feeling really like giving their power away to other people right now. Because they're mad at how, like, you know, this person's not wearing a mask. My family's meeting over Christmas. I can't believe they're doing this. You know, these people should be doing this. And like, I hate the anti-vaxxers and, you know, I can't believe, and there's a lot of like rage, that's being expressed in this particular way, but it's kind of perpetuating symptoms because people want to control other people, which is giving our power away. And that's kind of what perpetuates this cycle of feeling unsafe because it's like, I can't control other people.
Yep.
And I think some people feel they have an awareness of like, there's a part of them that believes like, yeah, I know I can only control me, but then they have other parts of themselves that are kind of immature and young. And they're like, I want people to behave this way. And things are only going to be okay if other people change. And I like, that's instead of me. And that's kind of my whole point about power, because when we expect other people to change, we feel unsafe because then we're out of control and we feel helpless. And so that's kind of where I think people are at right now. Like part, like some people I think who are having worse symptoms are in that state of like, you know, aggression directed towards other people and giving their power away.
The helpless comment is really interesting. And I agree with you. Like this is an instance where there's a lot of situations that we can control more than I think most people think that they can. Nature literally is one thing that you can't, like, just go out and look at any ocean, look at the waves smashing up against rocks. Like that is something to behold, and there's nothing you can do about it. And I, Christy Weepy, was on the show the Wednesday after the NBA shut down and the pandemic really kind of got bad. And one thing I'd asked her was like, why is everybody taking all the toilet paper everywhere? And she said, nobody has control over anything right now. That is the one thing that people can control. And she said, as a therapist, she's like, I'm not surprised. So Julie, that might be something that didn't surprise you, but as a normal person, I was shocked at the fact that I couldn't go to Costco and just get some toilet paper or go to a Safeway and get some toilet, like that kind of thing is surprising. But I think it is just, you have everything sort of stripped away from you, and what can you then control? And that's one example.
Yeah. The other thing I want to say is just that, you know, I want to validate that like this current situation sucks and people are not being great to one another, and like buying up all the toilet paper and hand sanitizer is not a nice thing to do, but it comes from a primitive place. And I think that also not wearing masks and like going to big gatherings, it's not a really mature adult way of handling things. But I think that because of that lack of, you know, control, we're doing things that are not very pro-social. And one thing I wanted to, you know, kind of send to Jim right now Jim, if you could talk to like the brain kind of part of it.
Yeah. And I'm listening to you guys and going, you know what, I'm actually right in the middle of this myself. And so I'm listening to this going, yeah, I've got patience, but I'll share even with my own family and my wife, there's been a little bit of this disparity between what people believe around COVID. And has created a little bit of a wedge, which creates what? Creates some anxiety, frustration, anger, a bunch of emotions. And I found myself having some symptoms over the last couple of weeks. And we sort of had like a big airing out. And that was a big sort of release just to kind of say, okay, let the dust settle. My body settled down. The symptoms settled down. So there's a lot of anxiety. There's a lot of fear. Like Julie said, there's a lot of rage. And basically what's happening in the brain is essentially that limbic brain, that emotional brain, that senses danger is just going off, right? And so a lot of people, you'll see people like all sorts of people. You see somebody who would not wear a mask no matter what, even if two people died around them. Then you'll see somebody else driving the car by themselves wearing a mask, which might be a bit much. So you see all the spectrum of extreme fear all the way to just sort of like, I don't care at all. Reckless attitude. And so there's a mix there, but really the people, when we're getting fear, we're getting that sort of visceral response from the nervous system, which is going to just tighten you up. It's going to create a sort of protective response in your body and could potentially give you symptoms. I've had at least three people I know that I work with that had fake COVID symptoms. Really interesting. Or had symptoms and they were very, very scared. Fearful, went and got tested and they were negative.
And then there
were two of them, the symptoms went down immediately.
Yeah, I was going to say, and then they were probably fine, right?
Yeah, so that was a great example of like, hey, I'm getting these symptoms. I'm 100% reassured that I'm fine. And then the symptoms immediately drop. So what is that? You know, there's the brain and nervous system at work.
It'll be interesting. Do you two think that the, you know, when we look back on this period of time in 10 years or 20 years, like, is this period of time, is 2020 and the pandemic and people's responses to it and mental health issues and physical problems and all this stuff that have seemed like they've maybe run a little bit more rampant this year than maybe they have in the past few years, but I'm not in the field. So I mean, you two could probably speak to that better. Is this going to be a point in time that you will reference back to clients of yours in 10 years or 20 years? Like, is there enough that you've seen this year where it's like, wow, this is a different year in my field of work?
So what I have to say about that, Eddie, is that everyone this year has had so much loss in their life. Like, there's so much unprocessed grief because we've lost the way that we lived. We've lost, like, going to work. We've lost seeing people that we care about. There's loss on top of loss on top of loss. Like, I can't, it's hard for me to put in words, like, how profound the effect of this pandemic is going to be. And that's not even including the people who have lost loved ones, who've gotten COVID, who have had, like, problems related to it. Like, that's just talking about, like, someone who's doing, like, okay, quote unquote, okay right now. So I think that this is super traumatic for everyone. I think it's going to be really bad for a long time, because it's affected everyone. And it's just the kind of effect that it has on the nervous system of not even being able to see people in person is so profound. Like, we are social beings. We need connection. And we're so disconnected now. We don't have the benefit of, like, having another nervous system to help regulate us in person. Like, even that is awful. Like, we can't touch people unless they live with us. So it's going to be really bad, and it is really bad right now. And I think that people are going to start, if they aren't feeling the effects now, they will feel the effects for a long time after. And I don't want to sound, like, really negative, but I'm just speaking the truth.
Yeah. And also think about the children, where their whole lives have been disrupted, and their friendships and their critical times of, you know, growing and being with friends. And so there's going to be a ripple effect, I think, for sure. You know, we talked in the past about how 9/11 affected people that were in the area. Now, that was just in New York City area. This is on a global level. So, like Julie said, people have been so disrupted. Lives have been changed, flipped upside down. And it's absolutely had an effect. I mean, I know for me, it's had an effect. And I work in this stuff all the time, and I'm pretty good about regulating my nervous system. So I know it's affecting people.
It's interesting you talk about the kids, because I've got two young daughters. I want to make sure I get this quote right. I've got two young daughters. One is 6 and one is 2. And the 6-year-old has really been stepping up her game on the reading and writing, particularly since all this stuff started. I think it's tough to tell, like, you know, 9 months of exclusively online learning versus what 9 months of in-person learning. I think that there's going to be this gap, particularly in the younger ages, the kindergartners, first graders, second graders, maybe third graders, where, you know, in 2-3 years, they're going to seem like maybe they're very behind. I think they'll catch up once they get to the latter parts of elementary school, middle school. But we're going to go see Santa behind a plexiglass wall this weekend with the kids. And we asked the 6-year-old to write a Santa letter. And she showed it to me last night before bed. And her two wishes for, she didn't ask for, it's so sweet, right? Like, and I'm going to try and keep it together as I talk about the two wishes that she had for Christmas. She said, "I wish that the virus would stop. And I wish that people would just say Black Lives Matter." And so the virus to stop is something that she literally talks about every day. And, you know, a large part of it is, like, we live in a cul-de-sac. There's 16 kids that are here in this cul-de-sac, but the ones that she's closest to, and there's varying levels of, you know, belief or whatever in the COVID virus, just in this neighborhood. But, you know, there's a couple of kids in the neighborhood who are the ones that she's really close to that have made comments like, you know, that she may have the virus, so they can't play together, or that they can't be close to each other. And for a 6-year-old, that's got to be a tough pill to swallow, and even just understand, like, what does that stuff mean? And maybe part of it is, like, we don't have a close family member or something that has, you know, passed away or gotten extremely sick. But at the same time, like, my family are scientists. So, you know, they're not like, we haven't hugged somebody that doesn't live in this house in 9 months. I haven't done more than an elbow bump with somebody that doesn't live in this house in 9 months. So I think you're really right. We're lucky in a sense because Zoe has, we're in a bubble with 4 other families. We hired a teacher. And so these 5 girls that have known each other since they were infants are in a study pod together, but none of the families can go see anybody. None of the families can leave. Nobody can have anybody at their house. But nobody's gotten sick, and it is a way for them to maintain we call them the Fab Five. Like, it's very much like the Sandlot of these girls do get to be together, but we really lucked into that, and not every little kid's going to have that.
Yeah.
So unless you guys have any more thoughts on that, I'd love to get a little bit further into the coursework and what's on the docket for it. What kind of things can people learn that's in it? When is it going to be released? That kind of stuff.
Jimmy, you want to take that?
Yeah, I'll just give a little brief teaser, hopefully to get you guys excited. We're going to start in January. I think it's January 9th. It's a Saturday, Pacific Standard Time here in California, 10 o'clock. So we're hoping to capture people that are in the U.S. and Europe. It's hard to accommodate the whole world, but we'll do our best. And we're going to run for 8 weeks. And it's really going to be sort of a mix of like understanding this from how the brain and nervous system works, okay? And really to teach people, first of all, that if you have TMS or PPD or mind-body syndrome, you're actually okay. I mean, that's like a really good diagnosis to have. And so I want to stress that. Like, and I want to basically let people know that the studies are showing that it's the brain that predicts the chronicity of pain in so many people. It's not the body. Okay. And those changes in the brain are typically pre-existing prior to any onset of pain. So we're looking to change the nervous system, the brain, the signaling. But it's a great diagnosis because it's not pathological. You don't need surgery. You're not going to die. So what's happening in your body is actually safe. Okay, now do we want it to stop? Sure. But we don't need to be as worried about it as many people are. And I think one of the things we're trying to stress is that people get more worried and more frustrated sometimes by doing the work, so to speak. They're doing too much. Really, we're talking more about being safe, feeling okay with what's happening in your experience.
Yeah, totally. And Jim and I both bring a meditation background, and I think that that's part of what we want to instill in people is how to just be able to experience and be present with whatever's happening for them. And, you know, Eddie, since the last time I was on the show, I completed my first year of somatic experiencing training. And so that's kind of evolved my practice of teaching people more about just like how to regulate their nervous system instead of searching for some kind of underlying repressed feeling. I think that sometimes that's important, but it's more about just feeling safe being with whatever is, because that's really all we have is like what's happening right now. And it might sound cheesy, but it's true. And I think in this time in particular during COVID, we really have to focus on whatever's happening right now, because if we start thinking about like everything else that's going on in the world, COVID, the Black Lives Matter, racial injustice, social inequity in this country, like we're going to start having meltdowns. So it's really about learning how to just be with what's happening right now, because that helps us feel safe.
How long is the somatic experience training? You said the first year. How long?
It's 3 years.
3 years. Okay. Well, let me effectively book you on the show for December of 2022. but certainly even midway through that, I've had a couple of people that are a little bit more specialized in that area on the show. And I probably get more feedback from those episodes than any other ones. Cause, anything somatic, whether Alan Gordon calls it tracking, but it's a difficult thing to, I feel like it's a tougher thing to like talk about, you know what I mean? Like talk about on a podcast or a radio show or whatever. But at the same time, all that learning is done remotely, I'm sure, with the training that you're doing.
I was supposed to train in person and it got put online, and it's actually kind of weird because there's so much experiential to it, and like sitting through a screen with like someone while they're helping you track your nervous system it's really odd.
Yeah.
But it's kind of really good practice as well.
Is the course, and maybe this flew right past my head. So is it a live thing, or is it going to be an archive thing? Like, say that there's a class at 2 o'clock Pacific, and there's somebody in a part of the world that can't watch it at that particular time or attend at that particular time. Will it be something that's archived that can be viewed later? Okay.
Yeah. We'll have both live and recorded. So people, and they'll have access to us for questions. We'll have like a private Facebook page. We'll have an intake on the front end to make sure people are appropriate for it. And we'll track changes over the 8 weeks. And so we're looking to try to, again, build some changes in people and build a foundation, a solid foundation that they can take forward into the rest of their lives.
How do you two, and maybe this is covered on the intake, so it could be a spoiler, but I mean, if it was tough to go find a TMS doctor a year ago, it's really tough now, I think, to go find a TMS doctor. In fact, I think Dr. Schechter is really the only one that's putting out regular content talking about TMS stuff at this point in time. Hanscom is going to have something coming out with Bruce Lipton here really soon. So he's doing a little bit of stuff, but there's nothing published or actually put out there yet. Somebody wants to engage in this course, but they kind of they still have that uncertainty. Is it TMS? Is it not TMS? Which is always kind of the classic question. What would you recommend for them? Is there something in the beginning where you're sort of reviewing personality characteristics or things to think about to sort of rule out some of the other stuff? Or what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, Julie, can I answer that?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
So the intake basically is all that. So it's to look at the person's whole story a little bit. What's their history? You know, from what's their condition, how long have they had it, what caused it, what kind of tests have you had done by doctors, what's been ruled out, and then move into more of the psychosocial side. Like, yeah, what are your personality characteristics, adverse childhood experiences, anxiety, depression, history of other TMS type symptoms in your life. So we're looking to put together a whole sort of understanding. Now we can't diagnose. I'll say that right now. We cannot diagnose over Zoom. So we can't be 100% sure, but we can look at what we have in front of us and say, you know what, you've been checked out by such and such doctor. You look like you have, based on what we can tell, some brain and nervous system influence at the very least, or maybe this is TMS clearly. And then we can say, hey, you know, if you want to join us, join us. But we'll say that up front. We're both professionals, health professionals, but we need to be careful not to diagnose over the internet, basically.
Yeah. It's funny you say the Zoom part, because there's a health clinic that opened up 2 weeks, just ironically, 2 weeks after the pandemic started, not far from my house. It's literally called the Zoom clinic. And then I remember thinking a month or two after that, when Teladoc was becoming even bigger, and I was thinking, gosh, how did they score that name? Perfect timing, like, to call themselves the Zoom clinic. Julie, did you have anything to add to that portion with Jim?
Yeah, I think that what I tell people is, like, number one, since I'm a therapist, or if I'm in my coaching role, I don't give people a medical diagnosis. That's not in my scope of practice. And if they want a medical diagnosis, I don't necessarily think you have to see a TMS doctor. I think that can kind of quell some fears if it's possible. But at the same time, I think if you've gone to a physician and they tell you, like, you have fibromyalgia, or you have, like, one of those weird things, and it's not a dangerous condition, then you can kind of work with the TMS diagnosis. I think that part of this is just what I was talking about earlier, that people want certainty. And when we're working with these kind of conditions, like, there really isn't certainty other than you need to learn how to be safe in your experience.
Yeah. I just had something on the tip of my tongue and it's gone. Maybe it'll come back. You said it was going to go over the course of 8 weeks. Is it going to be one of those things where it's, you know, recurring, it's landing on the same day at the same time, likely over the course of that 8 weeks?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. And then are you going to be taking questions during the classes, or I guess whatever instructions or whatever it is that we would call them?
Yeah, we'll be doing a mix of sort of education, knowledge, understanding, and then actual experiential practice of being with your experience and learning to build safety in your nervous system and brain.
Cool. Awesome. Anything additional about the course that people should know about? Like, where can they find it? Say that I'm listening at home, I want to sign up. Where do I go? What do I do?
Yeah, if you could put it in your show notes, Eddie, if it's possible.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you can go to my website, the Pain PT, or Julie's website. Julie, what's your website address?
My website address is juliemarkowitztherapy.com, and it links to gyms. It's under group coaching.
Yeah. And there's an intake form. If you just fill that out, what we'll do is get back to you and ask you some more information with the intake to see what you're looking for, what your history is, what you've done. Kind of do a little screening on the front end to see if you're appropriate. And then from that point on, if you are, we'll sign you up and then, you know, get ready to go for January.
Awesome. Yeah, no, this is good. So I had asked on the on my Facebook group, where I'd said, hey, I'm having these two people on, and are there any questions that you want to ask? Do you two mind if I start grilling you with the questions? What I'd love to have the format kind of be, because we've got 15 or so minutes, maybe a quick response from Julie, a quick response from Jim, and then if you two want to debate or go back and forth or whatever, if you want to fight about it, then maybe we can take it there. Okay, let me bring these up. Give me just a second. Okay. So I had asked, recording a podcast tomorrow with the Pain PT, Jim Prusak, and Julie Markowitz. Do you have any questions you might want answered? I got a lot of love emojis on that. It's my favorite emoji of them all. But okay, so from, and one of these, I can't remember if it's the first one. One of these has, I can tell that there's kind of a language barrier perhaps. And so I'm going to try and not butcher some of these. But this is from Michelle. I'm interested in finding the balance between resuming normal activity and not focusing on the problem areas, as the problem areas tend to be sore bits. Does that make sense?
So my thought generally about resuming activity is resume activity if that's what you want to do. I think that it part of retraining our brain and nervous system is going against the avoidance behaviors and moving towards safety, and moving towards safety is being able to do what you want to do.
Yeah. And as long as, you know, we know that it's not an acute condition, there's an actual injury, then you're actually safe to move forward. And about focusing on the symptoms, that's a great question. You can go into that for a while, but essentially you don't want to focus on the symptoms. If you think about it, the symptoms are the end of the line. It's the final output of something happening in your nervous system and brain. So you want to move upstream from that if you can. And that's one of the things we'll go over in the course, how you can learn to not focus on your symptoms and put your attention elsewhere.
Next one is from Victoria. This is an interesting one. Being adopted in the 60s or 70s, there's an Aussie surfer who's done research on it for herself and has raised interesting questions on abandonment, lack of nurturing in the first few days of life, such as being in an adoption ward, stresses of the young mother being forced to give her baby away. I was adopted in the 60s. It may be a niche topic, but if they have something to say, I'm curious. I was really excited to hear maybe what Julie's two cents would be when I had heard this. So much of our first podcast was about trauma. And so, you know, this person was adopted in the 60s. They've had, and it was right away, it sounds like. I guess, what would you have to say to her?
I think that separation from a primary caregiver, whenever that occurred, is traumatic. And so that, It's developmental trauma, which means trauma that's happened in the first, I believe, 3 years of life. And so that really affects how we develop as people. And I think that what I would suggest is seeing a therapist that specializes in developmental trauma to deal with that.
Jim, do you got any color to add to that? Or
yeah, I would just say, too, when we talk about sort of present moment living, I agree with Julie about, you know, seeking help on the psychological side. But in terms of like right now in your life and what's going on, is what's happening around you really dangerous? Because your nervous system and brain may be acting as if it is based off of that. But it's sort of like a memory response. And we'll go into that more as well in terms of like what's happening. So really spoke to that a little bit about sitting with uncertainty or sitting with uncomfortability, because your system remembers everything. It's got a database of your whole life, whether you know it or not, and it's acting off that. So a lot of times it's actually sort of a false alarm. And so we need to learn to kind of work with that when it's coming up in the present moment.
The other thing I have to say is, she mentioned abandonment. And when we are infants, if our parents abandon us or we perceive abandonment, that actually is a threat to our life. Humans are dependent on their caregivers for longer than any mammal. So that makes it really hard when we're adults. A part of us still feels like we're that tiny child that is like totally dependent on this other person, and we're going to die without them. And so that gets triggered in adult life, and we have to learn how to recognize those triggers and see, like Jim was saying about safety in the present, like we're not actually going to die. We have healthier adult parts of us that can function, or else you wouldn't be sending a Facebook message asking that question if you couldn't function as an adult. So I think it's part of that is coordination of different parts of ourselves, which when I do psychotherapy with people, a lot of that is the work of recognizing these younger parts of ourselves and helping them feel safe as well.
Good answer. It when she had said it, it reminded my little brother was abandoned at 1 or 1.5, and we adopted him when he was 2, and we went out for drinks a couple of years ago, and I just asked him how things were going, and he said we're 6 years apart, so he's 28, and he said that he started having these really bad headaches, migraines a lot, and I was asking more of the basic questions, you know, are you sleeping well? You know, that kind of stuff. And he said he's been having these, not night terrors, but, you know, nightmares where he's waking up several times a night. And he says he starts having this dream where he's in the hospital and he's got all these electrodes and stuff that are stuck to him. And then he wakes up and then he falls back asleep and he's right back into the dream. Like there is no, he doesn't break from that. And I had, you know, part of me was thinking, based on the conditions that he would have been found in, it's highly possible that that real thing happened. And that that's what but he said it went on for weeks. He was having this dream every single night. So her question reminded me a lot of that. So the next one is from Carrie. My main trigger now is people behaving in a passive aggressive manner towards me. Clearly, I see that as a massive threat. It's such a Seattle thing, but I don't think she lives in Seattle. My main trigger now is people behaving in a passive-aggressive manner toward me. Clearly, I see that as a massive threat, and pain frequently results. Would be interested in their take on how to manage passive aggression more effectively, especially with Christmas coming up. Many thanks.
Well, Carrie, I just want to say passive aggression is really awful, and I would like to use a curse word, but I'm not going to do it right now. I think part of it is just kind of getting back in our own experience, right? Like instead of focusing on the other, which means that we're helpless and out of control, we can go back into like, what do I need right now? Do I need to set a boundary with this person of being like, you know, I can't speak to you if you're going to be passive aggressive, like I'm going to step away from this conversation. Or sometimes what I like to do with people who are passive aggressive is meet them with curiosity. Like, what did you mean by that? Can you say more about what you're saying? And like, sometimes when I don't know what you're talking about. Like, I don't know. And it's like, oh, okay. You know, I guess so. But you know, I think that it's hard. We have to learn how to interpersonally, you have to act interpersonally appropriate with other people. But I think we can also feel our feelings about the situation. Like it's, people who are passive aggressive are really annoying. So we can be like, yeah, that's annoying. Like, it's okay that I'm annoyed and I don't have to give that person power over me. Like, I'm allowed to feel what I feel about the situation. And if the person is, you know, being nasty, like, we don't have to engage in that conversation necessarily.
Yeah, totally agree with that. The person is passive aggressive is probably not acting in a very healthy way. So you don't want to be part of that. So you basically, like you said, either set a boundary or express yourself and don't be, I guess, worried if you are triggered, because it's not very normal behavior. Most people probably would be triggered. Who likes a passive aggressive person? I don't. So don't judge anything. It's just if you have that reaction that's coming up for you, then you can decide how you want to express that, either leave the situation, say something normal about it, There's different things you can do that would be appropriate.
My wife's really good with the passive aggressive stuff. Once every 3 to 4 weeks, I'll say something that's passive aggressive. And it's like, as it's leaving my mouth, I'm trying to grab the words and shove them back in so I don't say it. But her response is always the same. Don't come at me with that aggressive or that with that passive aggressive bullshit. And then it's over. You know what? And that's it.
Eddie, you're not alone. You're not alone. I've had that like basically exact same thing where it's like something passive aggressive is coming out of my mouth and I'm just like, I can't believe I just said that.
Bring it back in. I want to rewind. I want to my Roku has the back 15 seconds button, and I just every time I do that, I just think of the button on it. I wish I could just point it at my face and do it myself. Okay, I'm interested in understanding the. Oh, this is from Allison. I'm interested in understanding the fear side of things a little better. Fear of symptoms is what fuels the situation. However, pushing the fear away or ignoring it is repressing those feelings. So, how do we acknowledge fear as a valid feeling like any other, yet not give it the power, Julie, to keep symptoms firing? What does a healthy response to fear look like?
So, my approach to that is we acknowledge that part of us that's afraid. Validate its feelings, like, because usually it's a very young part of us that needs some kind of care and nurturance of like, yeah, you know, you're safe, it's okay, like I've got you, I can take care of you, I understand that you're afraid. Something making an empathic statement that validates the feeling, and then kind of recognizing that that's simply a part of our experience, that's not the whole experience. I know that when people are overwhelmed with their TMS symptoms, oftentimes they can't recognize that that's just a part. It's not the whole experience. So right now I hear some feedback actually. I don't know where it's going.
I'm not hearing it, but
okay. All right, cool. So acknowledge that, validate the feeling, recognize that you're safe, that nothing dangerous is actually happening. And that can kind of help dial some back the fear and maybe quell the symptom because you're not giving it so much power.
Yeah, I agree. It's you got to look at what's going on around you. So for example, what's happening? Is it really fear or is it anxiety? Because a lot of times this feeling we get in us, it's being stimulated from the brain in our bodies, but there's really nothing dangerous happening. But we react to this feeling in us as if there's real true danger, right? Because of our past experiences, traumas, things have happened to us, that feels the same way. But you don't have to run from it. You don't have to fight it. You don't have to do anything other than accept it if you know you're safe. And that's part of this, we're learning to sit with what's uncomfortable in you, because if you do and you don't stir it up, the brain stops stimulating that feeling and the feeling goes away just like any other feeling.
One thing I wanted to add to that is something from somatic experiencing. A particular exercise can be super helpful. It's called orienting. And what we do with orienting is we look around wherever we are and we notice where we are and we kind of like become curious about our environment. And then that helps us realize that we're not in the past where things actually were scary and dangerous. We're adults. We can take care of ourselves. Like nothing's actually happening. We're just triggered. And I think that the like recognizing I am triggered right now can really help as well. Instead of being like, this is like happening to me. It's like differentiating between I'm triggered versus like, I'm just so overwhelmed by whatever this experience is right now. It can really help as well.
So Danny had asked a similar enough question to where I'm going to skim past it because it's essentially related directly to the one that Allison had just asked. But in exchange for that, I will guide everybody to mytmsjourney.com, which Danny runs. It's a great resource to find kind of everything TMS. So from Natasha, she had asked, what if you have if you have visible tissue damage that doesn't cause pain in most people, but does cause you pain? My case is similar to a hernia. I'm told that it shouldn't cause pain, but it's wreaking havoc on my nervous system. I can't seem to wind it down.
I'll let Jim take that.
Yeah, I mean, she kind of threw in there that it's wreaking havoc on her nervous system. So to me, it's not just the physical issue, right? Like any physical issue should heal, or if it needs attending to, like a surgery or something else, then that should be tended to. And if it's anything more than that, meaning it sounds like it's more than usual for what she has, there's a really good chance that's her nervous system and brain are part of this. And that's the case for a lot of people in chronic pain, is that that brain and nervous system takes something that's small and amplify it and make it into a big wildfire in the body. So I would have her just look into that a bit more in terms of what, you know, what is going on, what's physical, and then how much of it is that versus the nervous system and brain.
Julie, do you want to add anything or no?
No.
Okay. Well, gosh, I feel bad because this next question is most likely going to be just for Jim. Actually, it will be entirely for Jim. Advice for other PTs. I'm a PT for integrating pain science when I treat patients.
Oh boy. Well,
and maybe this will take longer than a few minutes, but
no,
as much as you can.
Not really.
Okay.
The quick answer is yes. Well, PTs, I mean, we're traditionally, like, unlike Julie, we are trained in silos, which are starting to slowly cross over a little bit. But basically, our training is very physical based, you know, physical therapy. We are learning more about brain science. We are learning more about the nervous system, but it's sort of secondary. You know, when we do our assessments with people, we're really honing on mechanical, physical factors. And I think a lot of PTs are starting to open to this now, and they should. I know Dr. Schubiner has had a lot of PTs starting to attend his trainings, which is optimistic. And I think in the chronic pain world, we need to look at this because we're missing the mark. You know, we really are. We're treating these chronic patients the same way we treat acute patients. And we're just spinning the wheel. And sometimes they're in PT for years and they're not gaining any traction. So I would say, yeah, you know, we need to do a better job. Again, Dr. Schubiner told me, he's like, hey, it's going to take like 30 years for this to get into the system. It's just a paradigm shift, which takes time. So I encourage her to just learn and, you know, try to incorporate as much as you can, because it's super valuable when you're working with chronic pain.
Two things that really stuck with me on the PT side that resonated with me, and maybe they wouldn't with every client, but when I was going through the recovery from my shoulder surgery, one of the prescriptions daily that my PT gave me was just 5 minutes of belly breathing, which you would think wouldn't be par for the course with a broken arm and then a torn rotator cuff and then a torn labrum and then microfracture surgery on the glenoid. You know, none of that stuff would lend itself, you would think, to doing belly breathing. But I think to him it was like, you're removing the exclamation point from the pain you're probably going to be in by adding this little thing. And then I'm going to couple that with one of the best things that I've seen. Shout out to you, Jim. You put out a video last week on your YouTube channel, Move Upstream from Bodily Symptoms to the Nervous System. I think it is one of the best things I've seen on things that have really helped me. It was a big light bulb moment when I had watched it. And the part that I'm talking about is more about like basically bracing all the time with my belly. And I always think about, you know, when I crushed my ankle 9 months ago, I was in the fetal position because it hurt so bad. And that constant constricting that, since I watched that video, I've just sort of taken this inventory several times a day where I'm like, something's achy. And then I realize my stomach is all tensed up. And then when I just sort of, you know, sit with that for a minute and let that go, everything, you know, the tension is kind of relieved. Which, Julie, the last episode we talked about, I was telling you about how shitty I felt like my deadlifts were. And I'm on my final week of a deadlifting program, and I hit my best set of 2 5-sets the other day that I've ever done. And it was just since I had just taken into account Jim's thing of like, take inventory of how your belly feels. And I think maybe it's like, wow, like flexing my abs 24 hours a day for years. And then suddenly that's unflexed and it can relax and rest a little bit and then use it when I need it in these deadlift sets has really made a lot of difference. And so it's funny because I thought about both of you when I watched that and then went on to actually do the lifting with it. So
I think you're trying to do deadlifts when you're walking around town, Eddie.
I mean, real quick
on that. I talked about this before in one of, I think, our episodes, is that I actually studied with Peter O'Sullivan in Australia back in the early 2000s, and he was like one of the leaders in the world on this core stability. And we were doing all the research on the multifidus, transverse abdominis, all these muscles. And he had all these publications. He literally threw them away about 5 years after I was there because he said, you know what? This doesn't make sense. It was more about tension than it was about weakness. And so it speaks exactly to that video I made where we're actually holding ourselves in these reflexive patterns unconsciously. And it's an indication of our nervous system and brain. So that's why it's good to go to that versus your symptoms, which not much you can do with that if you're just focusing on your symptoms.
I mean, even in the setup for the snatches I was doing this morning, I was getting to my set position and normally I would just grip it and rip it and go. But this morning I was literally just taking a half a second to be like, where is my belly right now? Let it drop, which I think you had said in the video. And I can feel almost like a balloon drops from my, you know, from my up, like where my sternum is, all the way down to lower belly. And that was just helping me get even more press out of the floor. So I don't know, little interesting things that helped in a couple of different arenas. I promised we'd get out of here by one. Any closing comments for the two of you before this airs tomorrow?
Well, I'm really excited that we're launching this course. I really hope that some people get some value out of it. I think that what I hope is we've conveyed in this conversation is that we just want to help people simplify what they're doing in order to get over this stuff. And also just know that like this course isn't a substitute for psychotherapy as well. If people are dealing with severe mental health issues, like they should definitely see a therapist. This is for TMS issues only.
Yeah. I'm super excited as well. We were kicking it around for a while and we finally said, we got to do this. Like we didn't have all the material together, but we know what we're doing. Come on. We need to just get going because, you know, you can get bogged down in the details, I think, too much. And both of us were like, my gosh, this is pretty straightforward. We don't want to give people like 100 things to do because then you just get lost in the shuffle. And I hear that so much from patients. So we're hoping to offer a very simplified, direct approach that makes sense from the science. And we're hoping you guys join us, whoever is interested.
Awesome. Well, thank you both. Maybe you both come back early February after about halfway through, you know, 4 of the 8 weeks. And I'll link where you can find this. I'll link both of your websites in the show notes. But thanks, everybody, for joining us. And thank you both for coming on. This was a lot of fun. And the hours always go by super fast. But it is what it is. And you're both a blast.
Thanks, Eddie.
Thank you, Eddie. Appreciate it.